Okay, we're starting here on the top of Zion Amud Aleph. We finished off with the Mishnah from Challah. The Mishnah in Challah said to us, if there was Tumah before you reach the point of kneading the dough, which means that it was kulin completely, if at that point it became Tameh Misafeh, then you can continue with Tumah. You don't have to do it Bitara, because there's no Isur of making it Tameh at that point, and since it's Safek Tumah, already, then you can't do anything with it, even if you're mafreshit later, it doesn't help you because you're doing it bit tumah. And so then adding on more tumah to chulin, there's no iser to do such, and there's no downside, there's no deficit from doing such. Can't give it to the kohen anyway because of the safek tumah. So if it's vadai tumah, there's nothing wrong with it. And of course, the safek tumah has to be the type of tumah that affects chulin. On the other hand, if the safek tumah arose after you already did the Gilgula Isa, after you already did the kneading, where it's now Chayevet in Chala, then at that point, even if it's a Safek Tumah, you can't go ahead and then do a Vadai Tumah. Now, even though all the things we said about the first scenario are true in the second scenario, which is no downside, it's not going to change anything. Nevertheless, there is one difference, which is once you have a din of Tumah in there, which Chala is deemed like Tumah, then you have the requirement of Mishmeret Trumotai. Mishmeret Trumotai is a requirement to guard Truma from coming Tameh. But it says Trumotai in plural. And that protection is against Truma that's Tehora and Truma that is Kluya. Doesn't matter whether it's Tahor or whether it's a fake Tahor, Tameh. In either of those cases, you have a requirement to protect it against becoming full-fledged Tuma. So in that scenario, if you have a Safek Tumah, you may not be Mitameh it. The Mishnah explained why that was. That's because prior to the kneading of the dough, it's Chulin, and there's no Isur of being Mitameh Chulin Beretz Yisrael. And then after the kneading, then it's already Tevel Lechala, and Tevel Lechala Kechala Damu. That has something that has a requirement of Chala to be removed from it. Even though it has yet to be removed, it gains the status similar to that of Chala. That's why you can't be mitameh. Now, Tana, on that, as Rashi says over here, when you did it bitara, because of this safek, the shenolad ba, it is tluya, lo ochlim, velo sorfim. It is still a safek tuma, and therefore you're not going to eat it, and you're not going to burn it, because there's a safek tuma over here. Since you can't make it into vadai tameh, then it doesn't change the fact that there is a safek tuma. And that Safek Tumah has the following result. Now, the Mara asks, Be'eza Safek Amru. When do we say that the Safek Tumah makes it into a Safek that has ramifications that it remains Tuya? What Safek are we speaking about here? Be'Safek Chala. It must be a Safek of Chala. It must be the type of Safek that is impactful on Chala, but not necessarily impactful on Chulin. Because it has ramifications here only because it's Tevel Lechala and not because Stam that it is Chulin. So that means that it must be a Safek that relates to its status as Chala. My Safek Chala. What exactly does that mean? What type of Tuma only has application by Chala does not have application by Chulin? Abai Virova Damrei Tarbayu. They both say, Shlo Tomar Behochachot Shaninu. Kamo Shnei Shvilim. It can't be the case of Hochachot, where we know there's a real Safek, like the case of Shnei Shvilim, Tahatam Chulin Greda Nami Mitamu. Because over there, that Safek has impact not only on Shuma, not only on Chala, but also on Chulin. Rashi says this references to a case where an individual went down a path, one of the paths is Tameh, one of the paths is Tahor, and he doesn't know whether he went down the Tameh path, or whether he went down the Tahor path. He went down one of the two, and one of them is Tameh. That makes it a Safek Tumah. But in that Safek Tumah, there's a real Safek, and that Safek has application even by Chulin. We would say that it has impact not just by the case of Tumah and Chala. And you're searching for something that is Safek Chala, something that only has a din of Safek Tumah for Chala, for Tumah, not something that has a Safek Tumah that affects Chulin. That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot, on the other hand, brings Rashi's interpretation. It says, "Venir the Faresh, Kai Tanya b'Tosefta the Tarot." Says, I think it's from the Brighton, the Tosefta Tarot, about you have two paths, one's Tameh, one's Tahor. He went down one of the paths, and then worked with Tarot. Then he went down the second path, and work with Taharot. Elu ve'elu mochichim. That's why he likes this Tosefta, because he uses the word mochichim, which is the language that the Gemara uses over here, hochachot sheninu. Perish. So what does that mean? Mochichim l'tuma. We lean towards tuma. So we lean towards tuma by both of them, because we don't know which one to make tahor and which one to make tameh. One of the paths was tameh, one of the paths is tahor. He walked down both of them and touched taharot. We don't know which of the two taharot should be tahor or tameh. And so therefore, mochachim, we lean towards tuma, and that's the reference over here. But again there, leaning towards tuma is even in issues of chulin, not just in issues of kala. Ella, the situation that we're speaking about here is benishan. It's to do with leaning. Ditznan, a Mishnah in Zavin. Zav v'tahor she'porkim minachomor. You have two individuals who are unloading a donkey, otoanim, or they are loading a donkey. Bizman shemasa'an kaved, when the materials that they're either loading or unloading are extremely heavy, tamei. In that case, the individual who's working along with the Zav becomes tamei. Masa'an kal, the other hand, if the load is very light, that's both for the loading or unloading, tahor. The individual that's working with the Zav is tahor. The case in the Mishnah in Zavin is that you have two parties working together in unison to load or unload a donkey. In doing so, they have to get under the load. They have to push together on the load. They have to unload it and bring it down together. In doing such, then the Zav and the tahor will come into contact and will lean on each other, or they will cause some sort of transference of tuma unbeknownst to them because of this nishan, because of this leaning that takes place. Because as Rashi says here, Shema mitok kovet ha-masa, because of the burden of the load, nishan ha-zav ala tahor. The zav leaned a little bit towards the other individual. They came into contact, or there was hesate between them, Nimsa tahor mesito. And then when the tahor is doing hesate to the zav, or vice versa. So it's not necessarily that they literally have to touch, but it has to be enough that when he's pushing the load, he moves the other individual. And doing such, there's tumat hesate that is involved. So in that case, we say that there is tumat hazav for this individual. Yet the Mishnah says that is not true by everyone, because kulan torim lebnei Knesset. These are all tahor, meaning that these cases in the Mishnah, Rashi says over here, kulan is afilu masak kaved, even in the case of the heavy load, where we say it's tamei misafek, and not just the case where we said it was tahor, over there they are tahorim lebnei Knesset. Now Rashi says lebnei Knesset are chulim chulihem b'tahara. Those are people who normally keep chulin b'tahara, so that is not a hesed gamur, because the whole thing is a safek. And since it's not a hesek gamur, and it's a safek, over there we say that the people who eat chulin b'tahara, it doesn't affect them. Now, generally, the b'nei Knesset means the everyday folk, means the regular folk. That's what it means in the Gemara in Bechorot. It actually means hedyotot there in the Gemara in Bechorot. Although, the Baalei HaTosafot over here say that these people sound like a little more than hedyotot. Sounds like they keep chulin b'tahara. He says that it's still a negative statement over here because they keep chulin b'tahara, but they don't ochlim truma. They don't maintain the levels of truma. So it's still regular folk or people who are not doing all the chumrot. And those individuals are not affected by the truma. Tosafot over here says that he disagrees with Rashi's understanding of a chulan to horim, where Rashi says it's even a masakaveh. But he says it means on the masan kal, on the lighter load, which is on the lighter load, that's where it says it's tahor, and we don't worry about nishan. That is only true of the b'nei Knesset, that they don't worry about it, because they're just doing chulin v'tahara. But ochlei truma, tmeim l'truma, it is tamei l'truma. According to Rashi, it is, in all these cases in the Mishnah, it's tahorin l'b'nei Knesset, and it's tmeim l'truma in the case of the kaveh, the heavy load. On the other hand, for the Baalei HaTosafot, it is only in the light load that it's tahor for the B'nai Knesset, and even by the light load, it's still tamei for the ochlei truma. So there you see something that is Tahor the Gabe Chulin, yet Tameh the Gabe Truma. That's exactly what we're looking for. A Safek that affects Truma, that doesn't affect Chulin. Here you have a Safek. We don't know if the Zav and the individual came into contact. We don't know if the Tahor individual shook the Zav, moved the Zav, or vice versa. Therefore, it's a Safek Tuma. That Safek Tuma impacts on Truma and Chala. It does not impact on Chulin. So we found what we're looking for. That's going to be the Safek Chala over here. Safek Chala is when you have Tuma that impacts only on Truma, not on Chulin. Even though it's only that lighter form of Safek and only impacts Truma, nevertheless, it still prevents you now from assuming that this item is Tameh or treating it like it is Tahor. Now, the Gemara asks about the assumption of the Mishnah from Chalo, which is V'chulin, Atvulim, L'chala, K'chala, Damo. The Mishnah assumed that if you have something that has Chala embedded in it, it's Chayevet in Chala, the Isa, and yet to have the Chala taken off, so it's Tevel for Chala, we assume there that it takes on the status like Chala. V'atanyo, don't we have a Breita, or it's a Tnan, because it is a Mishnah in Tvulyom, depends on some of whether there's added information here that might indicate that it's a Breita rather than a Mishnah. Isha shehi tvulat yom, a woman who is already gone to the mikveh, and she's waiting for the sun to set on that day for her to be tehora, she can be lasha et aisa. She can knead the dough, v'kotzah haymena chalata, and she can even separate out the chala from it. Umenechita, and then she places it, bikfisha, into a basket, that's a basket made out of reeds, or on a platter, these are like wood flat platters, and then she brings it close, and then she calls it chala, because that's a shlishi the tuma, and a shlishi has no impact by chulin. So first of all, let's just go through this scenario, understand all the factors here. The first of which is, you have a woman who has a tvulat yom. A tvul yom is a sheni lituma. A sheni lituma has no impact in chulin. A sheni lituma does have impact by truma. So now, if she's kneading the dough now is chayevet in chala. That means it's tavul, or tvul le chala. So that's exactly the scenario that we were dealing with in the Mishnah before from chala. It's tevel le chala. And yet, she is a tvulat yom, a sheni lituma, is working with it, no problem. If you believe that that's chulin, no problem. Sheni, it doesn't make a shlishi in chulin. If you think that tevel, the chala, is like chala, then a sheni lituma does make a shlishi in truma. And she should have impact on this dough. The fact that the Mishnah says she has no impact on the dough when you're kneading it, shows you that it believes that something that's tevel, the chala, is not like chala. That's the main thing we're trying to get from the Mishnah. The Mishnah also has embedded in it a number of other items, one of which is that after she separates out the chala, she doesn't call it chala right away. Because if she called it chala right away, she's the sheni, she'd make the chala, which is truma, into a shlishi and ruin the chala. So she separates out the piece and puts it into one of these utensils, a kfisha or an anchuta. Rashi claims that they're both kelim, she'en lam beit kibul. These are utensils that have no receptacle, and therefore they're not like your normal kli and not really mekabel tuma. That's really as a siman for this woman to stay away from it once it's chala. So you do it in that manner. So when she puts the dough onto that piece, she then is going to call it chala, because at this point she has it on an object where she's not going to touch it. So she's not going to touch it. She can make it into chala tehora. The only last requirement over here is umekefet. She has to bring it adjacent to the main isa, this chala. That is a requirement to separate chala min amuka. It's a requirement by truma and maser as well, that when you're mafrish trumot to masrot, you have to do it min amuka, from things that are present and adjacent to each other. And same is true here, that you need such a requirement of mukaf, and therefore she brings them together before she makes it into chala, before she's korela shame chala. The Baal HaTosafot discuss over here an important issue, which is, what do you need to make it mukaf? From Rashi, it sounds like the makefet is mikavrata la kli etzel ha'isa. You just have to bring the kli to the isa. V'kor la Hashem shemitzvah litrum in a mukaf. So from Rashi, it sounds like you simply have to get the kli next to each other, but you don't actually have to get the challah to touch the original dough. You don't need nigiyah. You simply need the kiruv of the kli to the other item. You need adjacency, not touching, in order that it be mukaf. Whereas Tosafot seems to indicate that this hakafa requires nigiyah. It requires actual touching between them. But then Tosafot discusses what else in addition to that do you need. Do you need also tziruf kli, the basket or some sort of utensil brings them together, which we're going to see that Rabbi Eliezer believes hatsal mitzarfan, that's later on today's daf, that the basket or the utensil that brings them all together in a single unit is mitzarefotam. Or do you also need nishikha? Do you need other items that then make it that you are chayav in challah over here? In the little print to the Gilyon HaTosafot, he says over there that it's simply enough that they're together in a kli. You don't need nigiyah. Tosafot seems to indicate that you need both tziruf kli and nigiyah. And the places where the Gemara says that tzal mitzarfan is enough, that's to make you chayav in challah. But in order to be mafrish challah, you need not only the tzal mitzarfan, but you also need nigiyah. And therefore he says, on Pesach, where we take off the challah after we already baked the matzahs and we put them together in a single unit, in a kli or covering them with a cloth, not only should they be covered, but they should be together, touching each other, in order to be mafrish the challah. And he says, it's a tzarachiyun, if mukaf minigiyah, by itself, touching itself, without the tziruf kli, without nishikha, without them touching each other in the baking process, whether that's enough to render it mukaf for challah. So that's what we're getting from this Mishnah, which is that all these requirements, but the most important is that B'kor L'Hashem Mipnei Shehu Shlishi, she makes it into challah because it's a shlishi, u'shlishi tahor b'chulin. V'ya mart chulin etzvulim l'challah k'challah damu. If you think something that's tavul l'challah is like challah, then ha tamit unu. Before she ever gets to this point of challah, separating out the challah and putting it aside, it already became tamei at the time she was kneading it, when the challah was embedded in the dough. So Amar Abaye. Abaye says there's a distinction between the Mishnah in challah and the Braita, or the Mishnah that we just quoted from, Tvul Yom, which is kol shevadai mitamei chulin. Anything that, if it was vadai tamei, would impact on chulin, gazru al sveiko mishum chulin atvulin lechallah. Then they were gozer that that tumah would be impactful even on challah that is embedded in chulin, something that's tevel the challah. V'hai tvul yom, even to lo mitamei vadai chulin, this tvul yom, even if we knew it was vadai tamei, which they are because they're at tvul yom, they nevertheless will have no impact on chulin. They're a sheni the tumah. A sheni doesn't impact a shlishi the tumah. So that is even in the case of vadai, there's no impact from this sheni, this tvul yom, to chulin. Therefore, lo gazru alav mishum chulin atvulim lechallah. They were not gozer on chulin that has tevel lechallah, that it should become tamei from an individual like that. As opposed to the Mishnah in challah before, where they were kneading the dough and they had a safek tumah, and that safek tumah, had it been a vadai tumah, would have affected chulin. The only reason that we said that this safek tumah only affects challah and not chulin is because it's a safek. Had it been vadai tumah, meaning that there was hesek and zav of the other individual, then we would say the guy is tamei and tamei enough to affect chulin. So since if he was vadai tamei, he would affect chulin. Then when it's a safek, he also impacts the nisa, that is tevel lechallah. And that's the difference or distinction between the cases. Now the Gemara challenges this understanding of Abaye, v'hame eit leit, shibin nida. By an eight late nida, the retroactive 24 hours of a nida where she is mitama, or larger spans of time in other situations, or depending on the opinion, the vadai mitamei chulin. If we knew for sure she had a sighting prior to the time we saw it exit the body, then she would be tamei vadait, and she would affect chulin. Below gazru asfeka, mishub chulin at vulim lechala. And we were not gozer on safek, which exactly me'et le'it is. It's a safek tumah. And we were not gozer that that affects chulin that is tevel for chala. Damar mar. And where do we know that from? Because we have the statement. Kabla minei Rav Shmuel bar Yav Yitzchak, b'chulin shenaseh atarata kodesh, v'lo b'chulin shenasu atarata truma. The Kabbalah that Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak had is that me'et le'et only has impact on chulin shenasu atarata kodesh, only at that higher level. It does not impact on chulin shenasu atarata truma. So here, chala has a level of truma, and therefore it's not going to have impact on it. You see here, woman who me'et le'et is a safek tme'ah, and if we knew for sure she was tme'ah, she would impact chulin, because she has a high level of tumah. Yet nevertheless, in that me'et le'et, that safek tumah, it doesn't affect things that are chulin, shenasu atarot atrumah, only things that are chulin, shenasu atarot atkodesh. And chulin, that's tevel for trumah, is basically chulin, shenasu atarot atrumah, and we say it has no impact. So Abaye's principle now is undermined. There's no correlation we see here between if you were Vaday Tameh, you impacted Chulin, then by Safek, you're going to affect Chulin, Shetvulin, the Chalan. That all connection has now been broken. Gemara says, you're confusing, conflating issues over here. Hatam lo p'ticha b'hu truma. Hacha p'ticha b'hu truma. You quoted us a proof text that there is no impact from safek tuma by things that are tevel for truma or chala because of the fact that chulin shenaseh atarata truma has no impact on it. That's not the same thing. Chulin shenaseh atarata truma is simply that, a chumra. It's chulin that's being done like truma. Other than something that's tevel for chala has real truma embedded in it. It has real chala embedded in it. Ticha means it's mixed. It is all entangled. So here you have chulin and shuma, chulin and chala that are mixed up. Over there, we might assume that even me'eleit, it has impact. So what the Gemara is suggesting is we're reestablishing this correlation or connection that Abaye stated, which is a nida, me'eleit. Had we known she was for sure tme'ah, would have impacted chulin. And similarly, if she comes into contact when she is a safek tameh, like a regular case of me'et li'et, so there when she is a safek tmeah, if she comes into contact with chulin that were tevel l'chala, she would make that tmeah mi'safek and would cause a problem for it. Even though if she touched chulin shenaseit altarata truma, it would have no impact. It would have had no bearing on it because we saw there that this doesn't have, 8-8 does not have implications or application to chulin shenaseit al tarat ha truma. Ve'idayma, and some say, another way to distinguish between the case of nishan, which is a safek tuma, and the case of mi'eit le'eit, is hanach mi'eit le'eit, because it's the rabbonon. It's only a rabbinic institution. Now that's very interesting, because nishan also is only a rabbinic institution. It's a safek tuma, and the Rabbanan said, by that safek tuma, you have to worry about it, at least with regards to truma, maybe not by chulin, but by truma, you need to worry about it. So even though nishan is also the Rabbanan, tumat mi'et le'et is kil tfe, is more l'kula, she'ain shum safek tuma, v'shasho seket v'tarot, because the safek only arises after the fact. Which is, while she's working with the tarot, we don't have any safek tuma. The safek tuma only arises because she has a sighting later on, and retroactively we're trying to apply the safek. That's different than the case of nishan, where the safek arises immediately, and then when you come into contact with chala or things that are tefillin the chala, there the safek already exists prior to your engaging with items that are tefillin. And so therefore the safek tuma pre-exists, you're engaging in other items. Whereas over here, the safek only exists after engaging in the items. That's one way to distinguish between them. Or another way to formulate it is that the tumat made late is just a sayag, and there really is no chashash tuma, even midrabanan, but rather it's just a takanat chachamim as a sayag, because everybody agrees that midoraita it's only prospective. Whereas by tumat nish'an, the chachamim are gozer because there really is a chashash tuma in that case. So that might be the difference, even though again they're both the rabbonon, even within the rabbonons there are gradations of the Rabbanans and made late is a lower form or a more kill form of Tumah. And therefore, even though there, if she was Vadai Tmeah, she would affect Chulin, nevertheless, B'Safek Tumah, she does not impact on things that are Chulin, that are Tevel Lechala. In that way, we'll be able to uphold Abaye's statement, even though made late seems to undermine it, because made late is a different category of Tumah. It's a much lighter form of Tumah. Alright, next Mishnah. It's a Mishnah that we've quoted a number of times before, which is Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Arba Nashim Dayan Shatan. There are four women who have sightings. They only have prospective Tumah, no retroactive Tumah. Bitulah, which again, the Mishnah is going to explain in a second what that means. It doesn't mean a woman who has not had Biyah yet, but means something else. We'll see in a second. Milberet, a woman who's pregnant. Menika, a woman is nursing. Zgeina, and a woman has reached menopause. All three of those women, if they have a sighting of Dam, that Dam is only causing Tumah prospectively, not retroactively. Achronim give numerous reasons as to why this might be true. One of them is that all these women have a Chezkat Tahara, and that Chezkat Tahara is reinforced or corroborated by their standing that we don't expect them to see Dam. So they have a much stronger Chezkat Tahara. And therefore, when they have a sighting, we look at it as being prospective rather than retroactive, because we're not going to undermine the Chezkat Tahara, as opposed to a regular woman who is expected to see Dam and will see Dam on a regular basis. Her Chezkat Tahara is very precarious. And so therefore, you can have Tumah retroactively. Another way you could formulate that distinction is that a regular woman has a Chezkat Tahara not because we know for certain or we have any evidence of that Chazaka, but rather because we keep her at her status quo. And until now, she hasn't seen Dam, and therefore we maintain that status quo. That's not true with these four women. By these four women, the reason they have a Chezkat Tahara is because they have established a Chazaka of being Mesulekat Damim. So their Chazaka is a full-fledged Chazaka versus the Chazaka of a regular woman, which is just a maintaining of the status quo. Or we have possibility of a difference between Shkiach and Lo Shkiach. By a regular woman, her Chezkat Tahara, she expects to see Dam on a regular basis. Therefore, when she sees Dam, that's something Shkiach and the Chachamim were gozer in that situation of Me'eit, retroactive Tumah. By these four women, we don't expect them to see Dam. So when they see Dam, that's unusual or unexpected. Lo Shkiach, not something common. And in general, we believe that the Chachamim are not gozer in situations that are Lo Shkiach, these outlier cases. The Chachamim are generally not gozer there because they don't expect it to happen. You don't expect it to happen. You're not usually gozer something where it's not really within your normal purview what you expect to happen. So maybe they were not captured by the Gzeirah of Meit Leit. I'm Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer's Bar Plukta, his peer and friend, Rabbi Yeshua says, Ani lo shamati ela bitula. Out of those four, I only heard one of them, which is a bitula. Aval, halacha to Rabbi Eliezer. But nevertheless, the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. This is within a Mishnah. We have a statement possibly like Rabbi Eliezer. It's not clear here whether these are a continuation of the words of Rabbi Yeshua. The word aval seems to indicate maybe it is. Or whether this is Stam Mishnah. This is the narrator, the Tanakama of the Mishnah, stating that the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. And now the Mishnah goes to the definition of the four women that Rabbi Eliezer mentioned. Ezohi bitula. What is the definition of a bitula? Kol shelo rata dam miyameha. Any woman has yet to see any dam in her lifetime, meaning that she has yet to reach the age of menstruation. Afa pi shenisua. Even if she's already been married. So that marriage is not the factor. Even though she's had biyah. Even though she's had dam bitulim. None of that impacts here because she has yet to reach the age or the physical status where we would expect her to menstruate. And that's what a bitula is. She is mitsuleket damim because of the fact that she is someone we don't expect to see dam from. Meuberet, a pregnant woman is mishivada ubra. Once it is apparent that she is pregnant. Now, whether the mishivada ubra is an absolute necessity, which is that we don't say that you're considered misulekat damim until you reach that point in the pregnancy. That's because the hakarat ubar is usually about 3 months into the pregnancy. And so therefore now you've had 90 days of Siluk Damim generally. So that establishes three cycles that were missed. And she then has a status of Siluk Damim. Or her physical state, when she reaches that point in the pregnancy, causes the cessation of the sighting of Dam. Or simply, the woman may not know that she's pregnant until the time that Yivada Ubra. So that's why you have to wait until that point in time. So those are different questions as whether it's a siman or whether it's the reason. Is it just a siman that she's pregnant? Or is it the reason? Meaning that she needs to reach this point in her pregnancy before we assume that her cycle has terminated. Minika, a nursing woman is ad shitigamelet bina, until she has weaned her son. Generally that is 24 months is the period of time in which a woman will nurse her son. And she weans him at the end of those 24 months. So until that point in time, she's classified as a minika. Natna bina the minika. If she gives her son to another nurse, a wet nurse, o gamalto, or she weans him, o mate, or the son passes away, then in that case, Rabbi Meir omer, mitama mi'eit. At that point, Rabbi Meir says, the next sighting that she has already puts her into the category of a woman who normally has sightings, or we can expect to have sightings, and therefore there's tumah retroactively made late. Chamim armim dayashata. She's still in that status of being misuleket damim because she has yet to sight a new sighting at this point, and therefore dayashata. She only has prospective tumah, not retroactive tumah. So according to Rabbi Meir, it seems to be that the din has to do with actually nursing. So if you are nursing, you get this din of dayashata. You're not nursing, you don't have that din. Because he believes dam ne'akar v'nasei chalav, that the dam, the menstrual dam, turns into the milk. That's the terminology that the Gemara uses. And therefore, if you're nursing, there's not going to be any menstrual dam. And that's why it's dayashata. On the other hand, the Chachamim think that you get the 24 months, irrespective of whether you're actually nursing or not. They seemingly think that it's connected to the woman's physiological state after birthing that causes the cessation of the menstrual cycle. And that's whether or not she is nursing. And that's why they say dayashata, even these instances where there's been a termination of the nursing. Ezuhi zikena. What's the definition of a woman who is reaching menopause? Kol shabru ala shlosh onot v'samuch leziknuta. Any woman where she has had three cycles at the time period she would expect to be reaching menopause and doesn't have a sighting. So she creates a chazakah at the time that we would expect her to hit menopause anyway. That's called a zakena. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, kol isha shabru ala shlosh onot dayashata. This is what we quoted previously, that any woman who has three cycles where she didn't see blood, she establishes a chazakah of mechuzuleka damim. The next time she has a sighting, dayashata, it's only prospective tumah. There is no retroactive tumah. He deems her to be similar to a zakena, similar to a woman who's hitting menopause. Same thing here. Since she is establishing that there's no cycle that's going on, three times is enough to make her into a misuleka damim. Yosi Omer, mi'uberet u'minika shavru alehem shloshonot dayan shatan. So Yosi says that by a muberet and a minika, you need to have three onot to classify them as misuleka damim, and only then is it dayan shatan. So as Rashi says over here, upolega Rabbi Eliezer v'tanakama. This statement of Rabbi Yossi argues both on the Tanna Kamma and on Rabbi Eliezer because he has a second requirement. He doesn't just have a requirement of Muberet Uminika, which we just defined, but he also has a requirement that the Muberet Uminika didn't have a sighting for 3 months straight for three cycles. Then only then are they classified as being Misuleket Tamim, by which if they have a sighting, then Dayan Shatan is only prospective Tumah. Now we already discussed that maybe by the Uberet, the requirement of Mishivada Ubra is synonymous with this statement of Rabbi Yossi, which means that you have to wait 3 months. But you could argue that they're not correlated, and there are different reasons as to why you need the Hakarata Ubar versus over here where you need the Siluk Damim, according to Rabbi Yossi. Ubame Amar Deyashata. And when do we apply this din of prospective Tumah? Biriya Rishona. That's only on the first sighting. Aval Bishniya Mitama Me'et Le'et. But ready by the second sighting, then we apply the regular dinim of retroactive Tuma, because we assume she's returned to her former state, that she's returned to being in a normal state, and therefore there's no reason to believe that after she has one sighting, she's not going to continue to have regular sightings after that point. The only exception is Vimrata Rishona Monis. If she saw the first one accidentally means it wasn't because she was a cycle, but it was some sort of external stimuli that created or forced the menstruation to happen, and the Gemara will discuss what those are. Apashniya dayashata. So do the second one is dayashata, because we don't consider the first one as establishing a pattern. We see it as an exception. And therefore, the next one will also be the first time. If it's the first time, then dayashata is only prospective tuma. Tanya, Amarlo Rabbi Eliezer, the Rabbi Yoshua. So here we have a more expanded form of our Mishnah, by whereby Rabbi Eliezer is communicating with Rabbi Yoshua and saying, Ata lo shamata v'ani shamati. And I did hear. Ata lo shamata l'achat. You only heard one. V'ani shamati harbe. Or ani shamati arba. I heard four. Ein omrin l'mi shalura ata chodesh. Yavo v'yayid ela mi shiro. You don't say to someone who didn't see the new moon, go ahead and testify to Beit Din that it's Rosh Chodesh. You ask the person who saw it to testify. Or in essence, what he's saying here is, there is no machloket between us. I heard four things. You heard one thing. Your hearing one thing doesn't mean the other three that I heard are incorrect. Doesn't mean that we're arguing because I saw them, you didn't see them, like the Chodesh. If I saw the Chodesh, I could testify about it. Just because you didn't see it doesn't mean it didn't happen, because that's not evidence that there was no new moon. The fact that I saw it is evidence of a new moon. And similarly over here, just because you didn't hear about the other three doesn't mean that I didn't hear about the other three, or the other three are not correct. And so Rabbi Eliezer is saying to Rabbi Yeshua that my position is not mutually exclusive with your position. Now what's important about Rabbi Eliezer is that Rabbi Eliezer says throughout Shas that he never said anything over that he did not hear from his Rebbe. That he only said over Mesora things that he heard from his Rebbe. In Mishnah Avot, he's Negdarke Bor Sich Inu Mabe Tipa. He's like a cistern that is plastered, which loses no water. He was considered to be like a photographic memory. He forgot nothing that he ever heard. Therefore, when he said something over, he always said over exactly what he had heard from his Rebbe. And his Rebbe was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And so Rabbi Eliezer only quoted things from Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He did not quote things of his own or Mesorot from others, or Mesorot that he never heard. And that's what he's saying over here to Rabbi Yeshua. I definitely heard this Mesorah, and I definitely have a Mesorah. Just because you have an alternate Mesorah, it's not a mutually exclusive Mesorah. It just means that you didn't hear the three that I heard, but we heard one of them that we agree on. And the other three that I heard are not negated by the fact that you did not hear them. Koyamav Shel Rabbi Eliezer. As long as Rabbi Eliezer was alive, Hayosim K'Rabbi Yoshua. They paskin like Rabbi Yoshua. V'char P'tirato Shel Rabbi Eliezer. After the death of Rabbi Eliezer, Hechzir Rabbi Yeshua et Adavar liYoshno. Rabbi Eliezer returned it to its original state. Kir Rabbi Eliezer, like Rabbi Eliezer. The language of the Braita is very difficult because it says here that they returned the Psak to Rabbi Eliezer. Who said they ever paskin like Rabbi Eliezer? It sounds like Rabbi Yeshua disagreed and they paskin like Rabbi Yeshua. Never, that was always the status quo. And then, when Rabbi Eliezer passed away, they changed it to Psak to Rabbi Eliezer, not like Rabbi Yoshua. But it sounds like it's prospective, not like there was some time before that it actually was that way. What you do infer from this is that, actually, the practice was like Rabbi Eliezer. But Rabbi Yeshua's Mesorah was different, and therefore, since Rabbi Yeshua's Mesorah was different, they changed the halacha to follow Rabbi Yeshua, and not like Rabbi Eliezer. May I ask, Michayav, my time alone. During his lifetime, why did they not paskin like him? If they thought he was right, then why did they paskin like him in his lifetime? Mishom de Rabbi Eliezer Shmutehu. Because Rabbi Eliezer has the status of Shmuti. Rashi, here in other places in Shas, says Shmutehu means excommunicated. This is Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkunus, who's the famous Rabbi Eliezer involved in the situation of Tanur Shachnai in Perek HaZahav in Baba Metzia, where they argue about whether a Tanur Shachnai is Taor or Tameh, And Rabbi Eliezer disagrees with the Chachamim there. And they say that it's Tamei, and Rabbi Eliezer says it's Tahor. And the Bat Kol comes out from Shemayim and says Rabbi Eliezer is correct. And he does all the things. The water goes backwards, the tree falls down, all the Simanim there. Because he was so adamant and fought against the Rabbim with his position, they excommunicated him at that point in time. Rashi claims the reason they didn't paskin like him is because he was in Nidoy, he was in excommunication. And when in excommunication, you can't follow the Pesach Halacha of Rabbi Eliezer. We'll see why. And that's why they didn't paskin like him when he was alive. Tosafot disagrees and says that even if he was excommunicated, the Gemara never uses the word Shamta or Shmute when it discusses an individual who is put into Nidoy, into excommunication, especially a person of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hurkanus' status. They use a euphemism. Usually it means bracha. They say not nidoy or klala, they say bracha. They use some euphemistic term to describe that he was put into nidoy. The fact that it says shamt over here is indicative of the fact that it must not be that it's talking about excommunication, but rather the Balei Tosafot bring the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rashbam's explanation throughout Shas, which is shmuti means that he was a follower of Beit Shammai. Rabbi Eliezer leaned heavily towards Beit Shammai, and even though he was involved in the Nisiut, he married into the family of the Nisiim. Rabban Gamliel was a Nasi, he married Rabban Gamliel's sister, and of course, the Shoshelet of the Nisiim comes from Hillel, and they were Beit Hillel, they followed Beit Hillel. Despite that fact, Rabbi Eliezer leaned heavily towards Beit Shammai. Now, there is a period in time where you have Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, and the machloka between them exists, and some people practice like Beit Hillel, and some people practice like Beit Shammai, but at a certain point, the Tanaim want to consolidate under a single Psak Halacha, and they want to unify the Psak under Beit Hillel. In order to do that, they have to push out people who are keeping the Shittot of Beit Shammai alive. One of those is Rabbi Eliezer. Since his positions aligned or favored heavily the Shittot of Beit Shammai, they did not want a paskin like him because that would have then reignited or renewed this disparity or pilug division between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai when they had finally just successfully united under the Shittot of Beit Hillel and basically said the Halacha is like Beit Hillel. So that's why they didn't want a paskin like him. The Sabar, and they believed, you have Dina Kavadei B'chado, if we follow him in one case, Abdina Kavadei B'chanaita, and then we'll follow him in other situations. So, if you think that the problem is Beit Shammai, that's a serious implication, because over here, it's not a Beit Hillel Beit Shammai issue. So you can pass him like Rabbi Eliezer over here. Probably, if we pass him like him here, people are going to think that we can pass him like him in other situations, and those other situations are upholding the Shitta of the Beit Shammai, which we don't want to do. Or according to Rashi, since he's in Nidoy, since he's excommunicated, we don't follow his positions. But now if you make an exception and follow his position here, people are going to think the same of his other positions, and they're going to come to follow his positions, even in the instances where we should not be following them. And why not do it, and then tell the people that the halacha is only like him in this case? Because we have a problem, which is that if people start to be noheg, like Rabbi Eliezer in other instances, people will not have the gumption to tell them that it's wrong. Because Rabbi Eliezer is alive, and Rabbi Eliezer was revered among the Chachamim. Again, he was a Bor Sid Sheinu Mavet Tipa. He had all the Mesorot, and he was held in the highest esteem for his erudition. He was the first one that made Midrash every day. He was the last one to leave. He only quoted things from the Mesorah, and he was sharp. We know that from all the interactions that we have throughout Shas with Rabbi Eliezer. And so they were afraid if they allowed one thing to be like the Halacha of Rabbi Eliezer, if people in other areas started practice like them, they wouldn't be able to shut it down. They wouldn't be able to stop it because Rabbi Eliezer was held in such high esteem. Now, especially if you're trying to battle this issue of Beit Hillel Beit Shammai, makes a lot of sense. If Rabbi Eliezer is revered and we allow the Halacha to follow him in one case and people start to gravitate towards him in other cases, then again, you're renewing the problem of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. And if it's Nidoy, then you're undermining the Nidoy. The Charpiti Ratosh Rav Eliezer, the Matzinu Machinan, after his death, where we can object to people's practices, Chekzir Tatavar Yoshno. At that point, we can object to people practicing like Rabbi Eliezer, because Rabbi Eliezer is no longer alive. We don't have to worry about his Kavod at this point. Or we won't necessarily be abrogating his standing because he's not alive at this point. And therefore, we can object to them if they parlay this psak into other areas of halacha. And if that's the case, then we don't have to worry about paskening anymore. And that's why they went back paskening like Rabbi Eliezer. Now, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, halacha k'Rabbi Eliezer ba'arba. There are four instances in Shas where we pasken like Rabbi Eliezer. Chada d'Amran, one is the case right here in the Mishnah, which is Arba Nashim Dayan Shatan. Ve'idach, another one of them is, and now we're going to go through the other three at this point in time. Hamikasha, a woman who is having difficulty birthing. She is going through birthing pains. She's having contractions. Kama tishafa, how long does it have to subside with a zava, that she'll be classified as a zava? A woman who has sightings of dam from her birth, they're considered to be dam leida. And dam leida has its own rules. That for a male, it'll be 7 days of tuma, 33 days of tara. For a female, it's 14 days of tuma, 66 days of tara. But those are its own rules. And you have to go through your process of tara for leida. But that's it. On the other hand, if you have sightings of dam outside of the context of leida, then that could be dam nida. Could also be dam ziva, depending where you are in your count. If you're in the first 7 days after your first sighting, then you're in the 7 days of nida, and it would be a sighting of nida. Then the subsequent 11 days, which are the yemei ziva, then that would make her into a shomer yom keneged yom for the first 2 days. And if she saw 3 days in a row, it would make her a zava gidola. There is such a concept as a woman who's yoledet bezov, that a woman gives birth, and at the same time of giving birth, she also becomes a zava gidola, and it creates problems in terms of her tara. Because she has two forms of tumah that are causing her a problem, and they're somewhat mutually exclusive, and therefore it takes quite a bit of time for her to unwind the problem. That is a case where she has sightings of dam during her Yemei Ziva, during the 11 days of Yemei Ziva. She has sightings of dam for 3 days in a row. So that would make her into a Zavah Gdola. The only problem is it's associated with her birth and birthing pains. And we assume as long as there's birthing pains and contractions going on, any dam that is cited then is dam leida. So how do I determine what is dam leida and dam ziva? The Mishnah says that if there's a cessation of the birthing pain and the contractions for 24 hours, then that makes it that the dam she saw before is not correlated with the dam leida. So if she sees for 3 days in a row with contractions, with other issues, then there's a cessation. And she has a quiet 24 hours. Then afterwards, she goes into labor and she gives birth. That which is after the 24 hours is dam leida. That which is before the 24 hours, dam ziva. Because that dam that came before is not, clearly not part of the leida, because there was a cessation of 24 hours. You wouldn't have a stop for 24 hours if you were giving birth. If you're giving birth, it continues on and the frequency should increase in terms of the pain and the contractions. And the fact that it subsided shows you whatever she saw before was not related to the leida itself. That is Divrei Rabbi Eliezer, that the amount of time that you need to create a separation between the dam ziva and the dam leida is 24 hours. Balocha kidvarav. And again, the locha is like Rabbi Eliezer. Bidach, the next case where we pass from like Rabbi Eliezer is, Azav vezava shebadku atzman yom rishon. Azav and azava who have to sit shiva nikiim, that they have 7 days clear of emissions in order to become teorim. A zav needs 7 days without a zav emission. A zavah gdola needs to have shiva nikiim without any sighting of dam. If they check themselves on the first day, umatsu taor, and they find themselves teorim. Yom shvi'i, they check themselves on the seventh day, umatsu taor, and they find themselves teorim. Bishari yamim lo badku. They didn't do any checks in the interim days. Beginning, end. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Harielu b'cheskat tara. They checked in the beginning, they were torim, and they had now a b'cheskat tara, and then when they check in the end, they just corroborate that there was a cheskat tara all along. And therefore, they are torim. They accomplished their shiva nikim. As the Baal Yitzchak would say, that we would not recommend this l'chatzchila, and that's true today as well. When women are doing checks for shiva nikim, they need to check daily for the shiva nikim. On the other hand, if there are extenuating circumstances, or in a case where there was a problem that arose, then if the woman checked on the first day and on the last day, it would be sufficient to create a shiva nikiim. they sometimes use this for women who have a lot of difficulty becoming tohurim, or they have issues with ovulation. They sometimes use these heterim in order to help them out. But the Bali Tosafot will make a number of conditions on it. One of which is, the first check has to be a hefsek tara. That has to be at the beginning of her day, of the first day of the Shiva Nikim, and has to be what's called the hefsek tara, the thing that makes her clear that she's going to have now a beginning of a Shiva Nikim. She has to do the check before Shkia on the day which will become her first count day. If she's already after Shkia, she didn't have a hefsek tara, and therefore it doesn't count as a day of Nikiyut. So you have to have a demarcation at the beginning, and you need to have a demarcation in the end. The Bali Tosafot here suggests that it's only if she checked on the seventh day does this work. If she checks on the eighth day, it may not help retroactively to give you Shiva Nikim, because she missed the seventh day, which is a sequence of days, and you need something at the beginning and something at the end. That's what it sounds like from here. So those are the qualifications that Tosafot adds. Now, Rabbi Yehoshua says, you get the first day, the seventh day, so now you're 2 days into your Shiva Nikim, you need another 5 days. Now, even though there is a break between the first day and the seventh day, nevertheless, we assume maybe there was no dam. If there's no dam, the first day can connect with the seventh day. If she has a setting in dam, it doesn't work, because you need Shiva Nikim sequentially in a row. If you don't have them in a row, then it does not count. So Rabbi Yeshua says that, okay, you get the first day, seventh day. We don't know what happened in between, so we'll say that we don't think it was undermined, but on the other hand, we're not going to give you those days as being Nikim. And so Rabbi Kiva Omer, Ein le'yamhem ela yom shvi'i bilvad. You only have the seventh day. So Gemara says, V'tanya, Rabbi Shimon v'Rabbi Yossi omrim, nirin divi Rabbi Eliezer min divi Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer makes more sense than Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer is more consistent in his opinion than Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Eliezer says, you check first day, seventh day, you have a cheska tara, so you got your shiva nikim and you're done. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua says, you can't do that, because you only check first day, seventh day. Therefore, we're worried about what happened in the interim. Well, if you're worried about what happened in the interim, how can you give her the first day and the seventh day as being the first 2 days of her Shiva Nikim? Because you're worried that something happened in between. If something happened in between, the first day is knocked out, and only the seventh day should count. And if that's the case, he's inconsistent. He's saying there is a cheskat tara to allow you to count this as the first 2 days of your Shiva Nikim. On the other hand, it's not enough of a cheskat tara that you can count the interim 5 days as being Nikim. So that's a very difficult position. Therefore, they say, Rabbi Eliezer makes more sense than Rabbi Yeshua. But Divrei Rabbi Akiva, Midivrei Kulam. And Rabbi Akiva makes the most sense out of all of them, which is, there is no cheskat tara over here. You didn't get Shiva Nikim. You can count 7 days, your first day of count, and you can count 6 more days after that. You lost whatever you did beforehand. Nevertheless, Aval Halacha, Rabbi Eliezer, even though we think Rabbi Akiva makes the most sense, the Halacha is right, Rabbi Eliezer. Now we have 3 instances where we pass on like Rabbi Eliezer. Our Mishnah, a woman who is having a sighting of Ziva while she's giving birth. And this 3rd case where we had a check on the 1st and 7th day for the Shiva Nikim. Veidach, what's the 4th case where we say we have to say the Halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer? It's none. Acharei Kelim shenitmu b'mashkim. The backs of Kelim that became Tamei from liquids. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, mitamim et amashkim. They can convey Tumah to Mashkim. Vein poslim et ochlim. But they do not give Tumah over to Ochlim. Not only do they not give over Tumah, they're not even pasul. They don't even ruin Ochlim to the point that's the last level of Tumah. Mitamim et amashkim vafilu chulin. They're mitamei mashkim, even if they're mashkim of chulin. Vein poslim et ochlim vafilu du Tumah. And they don't ruin Ochlim, even if they are Ochlim of Tumah. Rabbi Shua Omer, mitamim et amashkim uposlim et ha'ochlim. Rabbi Yeshua says, it affects everything. Whatever it can affect, it affects. I mean, if it affects mashkim, it should affect ochlim. It's inconsistent to say there's a difference between mashkim and ochlim. Mashkim and ochlim are both the same status as vis-a-vis tumah. So if one is tamei, the other one should also be tamei. I'm Rabbi Yeshua, kavachomer. What I'm saying is a kavachomer. Ma tvul yom, sheinu mitamei mashke, chulin. A tvul yom was a sheini letumah. Does not affect a liquid in chulin. Because chulin ends at sheni l'tumah. Tvul yom is a sheni l'tumah. That means if he touches liquids, doesn't make them into a shlishi, because there is no shlishi by chulin. Nevertheless, he's posel ochrei truma. Truma does have a shlishi l'tumah. And therefore, tvul yom is a sheni, can impact on
Truma, which has a shlishi, it makes it pasul, because it's the end of the line, so it can create Truma, pass Truma to it, but that can't convey Truma forward afterwards, so it's posel Truma. Achorea Kelim, the backs of the Kelim, Shemitame Mashke, Chulin, which even according to you, Rabbi Eliezer, is Mitame Mashkim that are Chulin, Enudin Shepulselo Klei Truma, certainly it should affect foods of Truma. It should affect items that are Truma. That's Rabbi Yoshua's Kalvachomer. Rabbi Eliezer responds and says, Rabbi Eliezer, Achorei Kelim Dirabonon, Tvuyom Doraita. You're mixing apples and oranges. You're conflating issues over here. Achorei Kelim is all an institution, mi Dirabanan. Tvuyom is a problem of Tuma Doraita. Virabonon, mi Doraita, Lo Avdin and Kalvachomer. Can't make a Kalvachomer from a Din Doraita to a Din Dirabonon. They're different worlds. They have their own rules, and they live independently. You can't say just because something's true, though, right? That's also true, midirabanan. Now he explains, why is it that it's dirabanan over here? Dimidoraita ain ochel mitamekli, ve'ein mashke mitamekli. Minatora, ochlim and mashkim, which are a rishon netuma, cannot affect kelim. The only thing that can affect kelim is an avatuma. An avatuma can affect Adam and Kelim, as well as Ochlim and Mashkim, but it can affect an Adam and Kelim. Ochlim and Mashkim, which are at the level of a Rishon Tuma, they cannot affect Adam and Kelim. So that's the case here. Mashkim that are Tmeim that touch the back of a Kli, they can't make that Kli Tamei. V'rabbonan u d'gazur. And the Rabbanan instituted a Gzeira to make it Tamei anyway. Gzeira Mishum Mashkim d'zav v'zava. Because of the mashkim of a zav and a zavah, that is that the liquids that emanate from a makor, a mayan, within the zav and the zavah, those liquids, when they come out, have the same status as the zav and zavah, they are an av hatuma. So for instance, the urine, the saliva that exits the zav or the zavah, those liquids have a status of av hatuma, and they can be mitamei kelim. So in order to not have any confusion with regards to mashkim being mitamei kelim, because there are some mashkim that are mitamei kelim, the Rabbanan made it that all mashkim can be mitamei kelim. But that's an institution midirabanan, which is what Rabbi Eliezer said. Full yom's midoraita. Mashkim being mitamei kelim is only an institution midirabanan. Mashkim, de'alulim lekabel tuma, mashkim which have easy access to tuma. The reason being is they never require a hefsher, the kabel tuma. They never require a priming to be mikabel tuma. Ochlim, on the other hand, are not mikabel tuma until they are mukshar, the kabel tuma. They need priming. So liquids which can easily become tamei, there the Rabbanan were gozer, that a kli that got tuma from its external side, from mashkim, which is only tumi derabanan, can convey, that kli now can convey tuma to mashkim, because mashkim are things that normally become tamei. But ochlim, de'ein alulim lekabel tuma, ochlim which don't necessarily have this predisposition for tuma because they require priming, and therefore they don't automatically become tuma, lo gazruhu barabanan. There, the rabbanan were not guzer that a kli that became tamei through mashkim will affect the ochlim. So Rabbi Eliezer explains his entire opinion over here. And the additional thing is, maishna chorei kelim dinakat. Why did it mention the back of the kelim? Why not just mention any kli? The whole institution of mashkim mitamei kelim is the rabbanan. Doesn't matter if it touches the back of the kli, touches the inside or internal side of the kli. Mishom dekile, because we are more makil over there. Ditnan, because we have a mishnah kli shenit mami achurav, a kli that became tamei from the outer side b'mashkin through mashkin, which means we have a tuma midrabanan. Achorav tamei, its back, its external side is tamei. Tocho, the internal side, ozno, and the loops, or the handles by which you carry it. Ogno, and the rims. Yadav, and the handles. Here, yadav are stake handles, whereas ozen is a circular handle where you can put your finger into it, or your hand into it. All of those are teorim. Nitma tocho. The other hand, if the mashkim touched the internal side of the kli, again, it's only tumah d'rabbanan, kulo tamei. All of it is tamei. Why is there a distinction? Here the Gemara doesn't explain it. The Gemara in other places explains that they want it to be a heker, that this tumah is only midrabanan. So how do they make a heker that this tumah is only midrabanan? Okay, the tumah derabanan internally acts like any other tumah. So even though mashkimi mitzameh kelim is only a din derabanan, nevertheless, we say the whole kli is tameh. But when the mashkim touch the external side of the kli, there we have limitations as to what the tumah does. It affects the external side of the kli, and that is it. Not the internal side, not all the other ancillary parts of the kli, they're not affected by that tumah. That's a siman, that this tumah is only midrabanan, and people will know not to be soreif tuman, it will only be toleh. They'll know that it's tumah derabanan. That's exactly what Rabbi Elazar is pointing out to Rabbi Yoshua, that this is all an institution midrabanan, and you can't bring me any proof from Tvul Yom, which is midoraita. And the institution derabanan is all logical. Mashkim are not mitamei kelim. Why are they mitamei kelim here? Rabbana did it because of Zav and Zavah, where they can be mitamei kelim, therefore they made them tameim. Why are the kelim then only mitamei liquids and not oklim? That's because this is an institution midrabanan. The Rabbanan said, this tumah that we put on the kelim only affects items that normally become tamei or have a disposition of becoming tameim, which is liquids, not by oklim. And thereby, Rabbi Elazar explains his whole position. That's the fourth situation where we paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. My kamash malan, Shmuel, what is Shmuel teaching us? Bekulu tnan hilchata. In all of these Mishnayot, the Mishnah says, halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer. V'chi teima, if you want to say acharei kelim, the last Mishnah that we brought does not say halacha ki Rabbi Eliezer. So kamash malan, delo tnan. That's what it's coming to teach us, that in this case, the halacha is also like Rabbi Eliezer. In the other three Mishnayot, including our Mishnah here, it says explicitly, halacha Rabbi Eliezer. That Mishnah does not. So Rishmol is coming to tell us about the fourth Mishnah. The lema, halacha Rabbi Eliezer, b'achorei kelim. Then why is he telling us halacha like Rabbi Eliezer in four cases? To tell us halacha like Rabbi Eliezer in the case of achorei kelim. The other three cases, we know that because the Mishnah already says, halacha Rabbi Eliezer, ela hakamash malan. This is what it comes to teach us. She'ein lemeidim halacha mipi Talmud. We don't learn out halacha from Talmud. So now, the way that Rashi explains this, is very fundamental in terms of understanding what learning Mishnah, learning Gemara is, and it also has implications in terms of our understanding of the Klalei Hapsak. So I'm going to read the Rashi inside because it's so important. We don't learn halacha from Talmud that is embedded in a Mishnah and a Braita. Shamoraim achronim, the Amorim who are at the end, diktuku b'tamei atanaim. They went into depth and understanding about all the reasons behind the Tanaim. Behemidu halacha al borya. And therefore they're able to clarify or get to the right conclusion. This is a principle we have by Klai Yapsak, is halacha kibatra. The halacha is by the later positions or the later individuals. The reason is not because they're smarter, it's not because they're a higher level, but because they have more information at their fingertips. They have all the previous positions in front of them, the reasoning behind them, and all the criticisms of and upholding by other generations. So they have all of that in front of them, so they have time to make a decision given that a lot of people have looked at it, and they can aggregate that information and come to a conclusion. About Rishonim, lo diktiku. The Rishonim don't have that. Ish v'divrei chaveiro. They can't spend time figuring out what the other guy says because they're busy promulgating their own positions and explaining their own positions. Ela kol echad mashasham mirabo mlamda l'talmido shmua kamo shehi. The reason is because every person or every tano heard something from his rebbe and he's busy conveying that to his talmidim, exactly passing it on in the exact form that he heard it. V'yaitanikra mishnah braita. Those are the Tanaic works. The Mishnah and the Braita are simply that, the information being conveyed from one generation to the next. And while he's doing this, he also gives explanations for his own position. He gives understanding to the position that he's conveying. Each individual gives explanation or explication or reasoning behind their position. Like we say throughout Shas, a person should first learn Bikiyut, have the knowledge, and then have svara, and then understand what is meant by the knowledge that he has accumulated. Va'oto svara, that logic or that reasoning, nikreit Talmud b'mei Tanaim. That's called Talmud in the time of the Tanaim. So for the Tanaim, you have two categories. You have Mishnah and Braita, which is the simple conveyance of the information, exactly the way the Masorah was given. And then you have Talmud, which is the explanation for that information that is being conveyed. And that's called Talmud. And what the Gemara is saying here is, we don't possibly like the Talmud of the Mishnah. Mishnah shnuya b'psak halacha, misvara Talmud, shalehen, nishneit v'en limini mimenu. It's from their Talmud, and it's not strong enough, because their Talmud is limited in its scope, because the individual is only explaining their own position, they're not explaining the position of the other parties, and not comparing and contrasting. That is something that's left to the Amoraim, who have a much bigger purview of information, and they can make a decision after distilling lots of different opinions, lots of information, lots of vetting that went through numbers of generations. They can come now and give psak halacha. So why Shmuel needs to give psak halacha is because his psak halacha carries weight. The psak halacha in the Mishnah does not carry weight. And therefore he needs to say halacha to Rabbi Eliezer in order for the halacha to be Rabbi Eliezer. The halacha like Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah has no bearing. That's the Talmud of the Tanaim, which is not definitive in terms of psak. And the Rashba just adds an additional qualification is that we only say this when it goes against some other klal psak. And over here, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Eliezer, the halacha is like Rabbi Yoshua. So for the Mishnah to come and declare halacha to Rabbi Eliezer, that will not carry weight until we get a corroboration from an Amora saying that the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer. And as was pointed out by my Rabbi, Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, that's how, that this shows you that learning Bikiyut without going into the understanding and the Tamim is the equivalent to learning Mishnah and Braita. It's only called Talmud. It's only called Gemara when you plumb the depths of that which you've learned to try to get to deeper understandings and Svarot behind it. And therefore, you can learn Gemara and it can be classified as learning Mishnah and Braita. And you can learn Mishnah and Braita and it can be classified as Talmud. It's not the inherent object that you're learning. It's rather the type of learning that you're doing that determines whether it's considered Mishnah or Talmud. Okay, we're going to stop here by the last line of Zion Amud Bet.